Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Monica Breen. When children don't reach certain milestones in their communication, they could have a speech or language disorder. Sometimes it's caused by a developmental disability or injury. Other times, something that might seem like a disorder might just be a cultural or linguistic trait. Today, we're talking with specialists about what to watch out for and what speech issues Native people specifically might face. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe in South Dakota says President Joe Biden taking office is a welcome relief. Kevin Killer says Biden kept his word on day one by canceling the Keystone XL pipeline permit. Lee Strubinger has more.
President Killer says tribal communities have been working for years to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. Killer says as a state legislator, he brought bills against the project that ultimately failed.
But, you know, to see that action, especially day one at the federal level, is a strong statement to, you know, who he's going to be as the president, you know, hoping to listen to our communities. And I think there's various tribal nations around the country stepped up and helped turn out to vote for him. So I think he's going to help repay that.
Killer says Biden's pick for Interior Secretary, Congresswoman Deb Haaland, will help lead to better conversations between the federal government and tribal governments. He says her strong background in Native issues will help her guide the Department of Interior. Killer is a former state senator from the district that covers the Pine Ridge Reservation. He's visiting the South Dakota State Capitol to pay respects to two former Oglala Lakota state lawmakers, Jim Bradford and Teresa Tubles, who passed away in 2020.
So just being here as a former legislator and as a current tribal president, you know, there's very few people who actually held that, and Senator Tubles is one of them. Senator Bradford was an amazing advocate for our communities, especially around schools, all this kind of stuff. But he was just a strong voice for us. You know, he always stood up when we needed to be there, and he was, you know, he's just good at just making sure that our voices were heard. So that's why I'm really here to honor their legacies and, you know, also sit with the other Native legislators and kind of visit with them a little bit.
Killer is also urging state lawmakers to pass a community school program bill that sets up four schools in South Dakota tailored to Native children. Courses will get taught in Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota, and will center around an Ocheti Shakoni curriculum. It's a bill that passed the state Senate last year, but failed in a House committee. State senators will continue their hearing on the bill on Tuesday. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
Indigenous people and their allies are calling on President Biden to stop the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline replacement project. A group of people met in Backus, Minnesota Saturday and marched down streets in opposition of the pipeline, just days after Biden took action to revoke the Keystone XL permit. Organizers say more than 200 water protectors took part in the march. The Indigenous Environmental Network streamed the demonstration live on Facebook.
Can't drink oil!
Keep it in!
Construction began on Line 3 in early December. Indigenous people have been opposing the project at construction sites in northern Minnesota. A resistance camp was recently set up near Cloquet to try and slow construction. While supporters of the oil pipeline say the replacement is needed and the project creates jobs and boosts the economy. The Lakota Ray Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians in Wisconsin is observing Treaty Day. Virtual events are taking place Monday in celebration, including a powwow for students. The tribal college is hosting a series of speakers this week. In 1983, a court affirmed Ojibwe hunting, fishing, and gathering rights. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is reopening its COVID-19 emergency assistance program Monday to help Cherokee citizens financially. The tribe has already helped more than 4,000 people with emergency funds since September and has added $7 million more to the relief program. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org. Support by Utah Dene Bakea, working to restore Bears Ears National Monument to 1.9 million acres with co-management by tribes. Info on supporting this effort at utahdene.org. That's UTAHDINE.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, joining you today through Skype. Children naturally pick up language and speaking skills starting in their homes. They reach certain milestones as they grow. It's important to keep track of those milestones, but not reaching them doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem. Overall, only about 8% of Black, White, and Hispanic children had at least one communication disorder in 2015. And from a study from the National Institutes of Health. Early intervention and speech therapy can significantly improve communication skills. President Joe Biden once struggled with stuttering. The young poet Amanda Gorman, who recited her poem at the inauguration, also overcame a speech disorder. Coming up, we'll talk with speech pathologists about what communication disorders are and why it's important for Native children and their parents to be connected to early intervention and speech therapy programs. Is this a topic that you're familiar with? Have you overcome a communication disorder? Feel free to share your story by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you have questions about communications disorders, call us too with those questions. Again, it's 1-800-996-2848. Joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is Dr. Christine Vining. She's a speech-language pathologist at the Center for Development and Disability at the University of New Mexico, and she is Navajo. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Vining.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. So, where do speech disorders come from?
In terms of cause, speech disorders can be a neurological problem. It could be caused by a traumatic brain injury. It could be related to cognitive difficulties. So it has there are many different reasons for having speech and language disorders.
And what's the difference between speech disorders and language disorders?
With speech disorders, we're looking at the actual sound production and the difficulties with that. And so the most common one for children is articulation difficulties. This is where they have difficulty with certain sounds. So they may substitute, distort, omit sounds. Another speech disorder is what you were alluding to earlier. Stuttering could be a disorder related to fluency difficulties. Another one would be voice, where the child may have, if they use their voice excessively loud for a long period of time, they may develop, a hoarse voice. So voice disorder might be another area. So these are all areas of speech disorders that are typically known to families. And then language disorders are related to how a child is understanding language. So their comprehension of language, their receptive, skills. These are areas of how children are able to use their ability to comprehend information. And then there's another component, which is the expressive part, which is how well they're able to communicate and express themselves and express their ideas. And so those are two major areas within the language component.
So there's a lot to cover there with these two types of disorders. It's so interesting to me, Dr. Vining. You know, when my cousin's kids were little, one of them started was calling the park the poat, and then his little sister picked it up too, and she started saying the poat. And you know what? None of us corrected them because it was so adorable, and we thought it was so cute. But I'm just wondering, like, how do you know when it's time to go get a test? You know, is it like when they mispronounce something right away, or what's the process of sort of understanding these things?
So early on, parents may think it's just baby talk, you know, when they mispronounce words like that, pout for a park. And then as they get a little bit older, you know, and they're still using that same word, pout for a park, it may become more problematic. And generally, we look at how intelligible a child is. By 4 years of age, you know, a child should be pretty intelligible. And some of the sounds that they were, you know, distorting early on, it should pretty much have it faded away, like when they stop certain sounds, you know, a D for an S sound, for example. You know, by the time they're three, those kinds of patterns start going away. And then by four, they're pretty highly intelligible. And they may have some residual difficulties with the R sound, which may still be developmental at that point. But, you know, certainly by five or six, you know, they should definitely have had all of their sounds, and they're able to produce them correctly. And they should have pretty good intelligibility at that point. So if a child is, you know, if you're having a really hard time understanding your child, others are having a hard time understanding your child, you know, that's a good time to refer a child for a speech evaluation.
And what tell us about this process of, you know, referring for a speech evaluation. What do you need to do?
Well, in our Native communities, there are a number of ways that this can be done. If it's a child that's at the very young age of under 3 years of age, you can refer to an early intervention program. And many of the tribal communities have early intervention programs. And, you know, in New Mexico, some of our tribes had their own EI programs. Navajo Nation has their own EI program. So that's a good referral place. And then at Indian Health Service also, you know, pediatricians are generally doing well baby checks, and they're looking out and for some of these developmental concerns. And so it's good to talk to your pediatrician, and they may refer for a speech language evaluation. And then in the preschool, we have, you know, the Head Start programs, their early Head Start programs. And so I think our school districts are pretty well coordinated in that. If there are concerns related to speech and language, they generally refer to the team at the school, and then they can continue to follow through with perhaps a screening, maybe a full evaluation. And so it really may require a team to take a look at the referral and determine maybe it's more than just speech and language. Maybe other developmental areas need to be looked at as well. And so then the team may move forward to do a full comprehensive evaluation and not just the speech and language.
Well, today we are talking about speech and language disorders, and if you have something you'd like to share about it, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're talking with Dr. Christine Vining. She's a speech and language pathologist at the Center for Development and Disability at the University of New Mexico. And Dr. Vining, is there a possibility? Okay, so when I was younger, I was a nanny, and I remember, like, when I was babysitting kids who were young, who didn't talk yet, really, just babbled. I didn't talk to them because culturally it just felt weird to speak to someone who didn't speak back, and I wasn't being spoken to. And I kind of confessed it to one of the mothers that I was, taking care of their kids. And she was adamant that I talked to her kid all the time, no matter what. It was really important for the development of language. And so, it felt really strange at first, but I ended up doing it. And I wonder if you can share a little bit about, the role of parents in, raising their kids, talking to them, even when they don't, they haven't developed language yet, and how that may or may not, fit into speech and language disorders.
Yeah, I think in our native way, we believe that children are able to hear the sounds around them, even in utero. So as they, grow, it's really important for the families to be able to talk in the language, around the mother, and then as the baby comes, to use the language of the home. And so in many Native homes, our Native language is really valued. And so even as a baby, we talk to them in the Native language. And as they grow, they pick up languages, both languages. So it's important to talk to your baby, even as an infant, just because they don't talk back to you doesn't mean that they're not beginning to understand the sounds, the patterns of the language. And infants are able to do this very early on. They're able to recognize the mother's voice and turn to it, and they begin to attune to certain sounds of the of the language. And so if you're speaking to a child in Diné, they're listening for those sounds and they're recognizing it. And if you're speaking to them in English, then they're recognizing those sounds and tuning to it. And so they're already preparing for developing language skills.
So important to talk to your kids. We're talking about speech and language disorders. We're going to go to a short break. After the break, we will talk more about this topic. A new report finds that Native American organizations raised and donated $32 million during the first 7 months of the pandemic. We'll find out how organizations adjusted their strategies to fit the needs during an uncertain time. That's coming up on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strongheart's Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans, available at 1-844-762-8483, or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. We're talking about communication disorders today. Do you have questions about speech or language disorders? Is this something that you've faced? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Before the break, we were talking with Dr. Christine Vining. She's a speech and language pathologist at the Center for Development and Disability at the University of New Mexico, and she is Navajo. Dr. Vining, anything else you want to add about the importance of talking to your babies as they grow?
Well, I think I was still talking when I went to break, so I don't know how much of the listeners were able to gather from what I said, but it's just really important for parents to speak to their children in the language of the home, and whether it's their native language, whether it's English, whether it's both. It's really important for them to be able to help their children begin to recognize sounds, to be able to understand and recognize the language. And so by one, they should be able to speak, you know, their first words. And then by two, they should be able to start combining words. And by three, they're, talking in sentences. And so it's a developmental process, and it does require a lot of interaction from the parents and reading to them, reading to their child, you know, talking with them, playing with them, interacting, engaging them, and supporting the communication skills.
Well, let's add some more folks to our conversation today. Joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico is Sachin Dana Begay. She's a training specialist with EPICS. That stands for Education for Parents of Indian Children with Special Needs. And she is the NE. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Sachin.
Hello. Yat Eshik Eto Shadana Sachin Dana Begay Yanisha. Nanish Eja, Nadansa Gai, Tetini Nislan, Do Tordajini Bashishin, Tuba Hadashache, Do Tubajna Eja Dashanella. Hello, everyone. I am Zuni Whitecorn Clan, adopted by the Red Running Into the Water Clan, born for bitter water. My maternal grandfather is the Edge of Water Clan, and my paternal grandfather's clan is the two who met at the water. So, hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Sachin Dana, it's so nice to hear from you again, and thanks so much for that introduction. We appreciate it. Also joining us from Albuquerque is Crystal Bear Heels. She's a speech and language pathologist and an enrolled member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe of South Dakota. Welcome to Native America Calling, Crystal.
Good morning, and thank you for having me as a guest, and also thank you for addressing this very important field. We have a lot of children out there who need a lot of help, and early intervention is the key. Thank you.
Yeah, Crystal, why don't you go ahead and tell us, a little bit about how you work with children who have communications disorders.
When I attended graduate school at the University of Kansas, our approach tended to be toward more naturalistic environments, which is very important for children, especially babies and toddlers. So when I work with young children, I try to find something that they're interested in the environment. For example, I might lay out a couple of toys or some clay or some homemade, say like drums made out of oatmeal boxes, and look at where the child is interested in. And once they establish an area of interest, use that focal point to mimic sounds that they can imitate, using some babbling words or some putting together some early words for them to imitate, and to be able to tie that word to the toy, or if it's a picture, picture books are really good for young children too. Showing them picture books and telling them the story that goes along with the picture book, and then adding in the key words that go along so those children can imitate the words and be able to tie a reference to what I'm talking about. And then building on, if they see a ball and they're talking about the ball, add in words like there's a red ball or there's a big red ball, adding more words that are going to be descriptive that will help to expand the child's what we call mean length of utterance, which is just how many words that child is able to pull together, and then gradually leading them toward saying short sentences. So really just engaging them in a referent point, example, books or toys or a short game, a make-believe game, or even playing something like peekaboo with the child, just to engage them and to show them how language is used in their natural environment.
That sounds like a fun job.
It is fun. I look forward to it all the time. I don't think anyone gets paid to play games more than therapists.
I shared my story earlier about my cousin's kids mispronouncing the word park. And, you know, is there any danger to, you know, letting the kids mispronounce something, you know, because you think it's fun?
I don't see any real danger in it. What we like to do is, I know as a parent too, and even as a grandparent right now with my grandchildren who are in the infant toddler stage, when they mispronounce a word, we like to play along with that word and then even just repeat it and say the word, the same word that the child is saying. As a child grows older, they should age out of that word. For instance, when they hear the adult saying the correct form of the word, they may correct themselves. If they don't, it gets to an age where I would say like around 3-4 years old, you want to start correcting that for them or saying that, you know, the correct word and having other adults in the environment also say the correct word. So the child will learn to correct that word themselves. It's kind of sad when their word fades out, the ones that we like to have fun with and play along with. When we start to see them using that incorrect form of the word and applying it to other words that have the same sound in it, then that starts to become a concern. When everything sounds kind of like gobbledygook coming out of their mouth, then we want to really be concerned that they are, in fact, experiencing speech and language delay. So in a typically developing child, we should see that child be able to start to apply some general rules for how sounds are put together to form a word and age out of it. But when we see them continue to make those same mistakes across a period of time and as they get older, still employ those mispronounced words or incorrect words, then that's a big cause for concern.
Interesting. I'm remembering there was a two-year-old that I used to babysit who spoke her own language, like completely, no part of it was English or any other language. It was something she completely made up, and she spoke it with such authority. Like, I remember she came to me one time and she was waving a pencil at me, and it was a whole speech, and I had no idea what she was saying. And, you know, I talked to her parents about it, and they said, yeah, we had her checked, and they said she should grow out of it. And so, you know, for the longest time, it was just kind of funny. Especially because it was with such authority. Have you ever experienced anything like that, Crystal?
I have seen it before, and there's a magical age around 3, 4 years, 5 years old where children are playing in their own imaginative world. And because they haven't learned to read yet, they don't apply the rules of speech to written form. And so they start to develop words for things in their imaginative world that, you know, sometimes they'll let adults into and sometimes not. So you kind of just play along. But imagination really is great for them, is really a good key for them to develop new language and new speech sound strategies for learning. But eventually, and I think it's good for children to have that good, strong imagination and to be able to build new words, because it develops pathways in their brain for what can come later when they start to attend school. So as long as it doesn't get carried on too long where you're not understanding what they're saying, then I think it's really healthy for children.
Yeah, I mean, I always just thought of her as someone who was going to grow up and be very, very confident, because she was incredibly confident with this made-up language. Well, we're talking about speech and language disorders today. If you've got something you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's take a call. We've got Kit in San Luis Obispo listening online. Hey, Kit. Thanks for giving us a call. What are you thinking about?
Well, thank you very much. I spent 31 years, I'm a speech-language pathologist, traveling the villages in Alaska. And I want to second this goal of yours to get more, you know, Native Americans to become speech-language pathologists. One of the first villages I visited, and I'd worked in the LA City Schools, the Seattle Public Schools, and the Fairbanks Public Schools, and then I started traveling to the villages. And I had to screen different grades, and so I was screening the first grade, and suddenly I realized that everybody in that room had a lateral lisp on the S sound, like the air was coming out of the sides of their tongue instead of straight forward. And I thought, wow, you know, this is very unusual. Everybody has a lisp. And then it dawned on me that, no, this is not a communication disorder. This is what we call a communication difference. And it's very common when you have a first language and then you add a second language. And the first language, some of the articulation patterns or the prosody or the grammar will blend in with the new language. And since it takes 7 years to develop the language in the first place, the first language, because our brain hasn't really fully developed until the age of seven, it all kind of becomes a blend. And so what had happened was the S sound just became lateralized because that's the way everybody already spoke. So luckily, I didn't make a fool of myself and say, oh, everybody in here has a problem. But had I already been a native speaker, you know, I would have known that immediately. I wouldn't have had to think it out. But so it's not a problem. It wasn't something I had to take care of. And that I just want to say before I let go is that I was very frustrated flying to the villages because there was never any follow-up. So they brought me out. I did the screening. I diagnosed. They got their money for special ed. And then I never got to go back and do any treatment. So eventually, we developed a program for speech-language pathology assistance that could be done in the villages. It was all distance delivered. All they needed was a telephone, which even in 2000 was sometimes not even possible. But we would send a box of materials with all the books and the tests. And then once a week, there'd be a conference call. And you could get an AA degree in speech-language pathology assistance. And it was so popular that we had to add extra classes when it first started. Unfortunately, I've left and it's no longer going. But many, many people went through that program. It's so, I was in a village and I diagnosed a fourth grader with a stuttering problem. Stuttering is a very complex disorder to work with, and I was somewhat of a specialist in it. And I had 20 minutes before my little bush plane was coming to get me, and I had to find somebody to train to teach this boy what to do. And all they had available was a girl who worked in the kindergarten with a kindergarten teacher, and she had her high school diploma, but you know, it was ridiculous. There's no way that I could train her how to carry out a very complex program in 20 minutes. So that was frustrating. So we definitely need more people who can travel into the villages. And eventually Alaska did develop a bachelor's degree in speech pathology, which is all distance delivered. And you can get your master's degree via distance as well when we partnered with East Carolina University. So those of you who feel like you're too remote, you can't get into a town, you don't have the money to go into town or take 6 years away to fly somewhere to go to college, you can do it distance. So check into the University of Alaska at Anchorage speech pathology program. And if you already have a bachelor's in anything else, you can get into the program and get your bachelor's in speech language pathology and then get into the master's program if you are, you know, if you pass all the tests and everything.
Oh, Kit, what an interesting story. Thank you so much for sharing that. We really appreciate it. And we want to talk more about, you know, careers in this after our next break. But Sachin, Dana, I want to give you a moment if you want to respond to what Kit had to share as a parent. You know, I know you spend a lot of time advocating that your students get the services that they need. Anything you want to weigh in on what she said?
Oh, yes. Hi, everyone. This is Sachin Dana. But yeah, being a parent with a child with a disability as well as for speech therapy, it really depends on the parent, you know, when for the parent to advocate for themselves, and I try and get the families to do the follow-up and to make sure that they're logging in everything that they need to know about what the next steps are and to get the parents on the same page. I think that's one of the number one things to do with communication with a speech language pathologist.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dr. Vining, we are going to a break in just a moment, but I want to give you a moment to, you know, the things that Kit shared, have you seen similar things where, you know, there's no follow-up or it's, you know, in remote areas, it's challenging to get the speech pathologist to come back?
Yes, I'm so glad you brought up the point of the need for more Native American speech and language pathologists. In our profession of American Speech Language Hearing Association, we have about 300 SLPs across the nation. And so in our state here in New Mexico, we still have not had an SLP for each of the Pueblos. And that's something that I really, advocate for, is to one day maybe each of our Pueblos will have an SLP. Maybe one day all of our Pueblos will have an audiologist. And same thing for the tribes. You know, we're in an age where this is possible to have every tribe to have an SLP and an audiologist. And in every Alaskan village to have an SLP and an audiologist. And so this is something that we advocate for in our profession, is that we want to be able to influence our universities to do more in recruiting and training our Native people to be not only just assistants, but to be a specialist in this area of speech and language and audiology. And even more than that, go on to get their doctorates and go on to teach and research and publish. These are our dreams for our Native people. Because when we look at the stats in terms of special education, we have the highest numbers in terms of in children enrolled in special education across.
Yeah, hang on one second, Dr. Vining. We're going to go to a short break. We'll be right back.
If you're a Native American entrepreneur looking to expand or start up a business, you should know about the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program, a federal program encouraging private lenders to make the business loan you need. The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can support you. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain sitting in for... You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain sitting in for Tara Gatewood. And today we are talking about speech and language disorders. If you've got a question, we've got some great experts on the line today. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. There's plenty of time left in the show to get your questions in. And we were talking before the break with Dr. Christine Vining. She is a speech and language pathologist. And Dr. Vining, I want to give you a moment. You were just about to talk about the rates of for Native Americans with special needs. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we look at the breakdown of what IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, every year they put out the stats in terms of numbers of children enrolled in special education. And in 2019, 6.3 of our Native children were diagnosed and served as children with autism, and 10.8% developmental delay, which is across all the developmental areas, motor, speech and language, and cognitive. These are under age of 9, they fall into this category of developmental delay. And then the area of specific learning disability, 38.4% of our Native children received services. And then in speech and language, over 16% of our children served speech and language services. So when we think about the role of the SLP, you know, they are supporting children with autism, they're supporting children with developmental delays, they're supporting children with specific learning disabilities, as well as speech and language impairment. And then on beyond that, a traumatic brain injury and other hearing impairment and intellectual disabilities. These are areas that speech pathologists can definitely play a role. And
Percentage-wise, American Indians have had the highest numbers in the last several years, and it's just that many of our children need supports across all of these disabilities, and so we need more speech-language pathologists and audiologists to be out in the communities to provide intervention and support in communities and training parents and helping them to provide supports for their children.
You know, I'm thinking about what Kit shared, our caller earlier, about how, she, you know, initially she was about to diagnose the entire class with a lisp, but then she realized that this had, this was because of the language that they spoke in the village in Alaska. And so do you think, Dr. Vining, that these numbers are representative of the actual speech and language disorders that we have going on? Or is there maybe over... diagnosing because we don't have, you know, people with the cultural knowledge that they need to have?
Yeah, I mean, we've had issues with overrepresentation with regard to American Indian and Alaska Natives in special education. That's been longstanding and well documented that there is that issue. And then on the flip side is that there are actually children that have these disorders and delays and difficulties and that truly do need intervention. And so I think it's important to improve our practice in terms of discriminating what's actually a difference, a language difference, versus what is an actual disorder. I think we are at the very beginning, at the very beginning phase in our field and doing that for American Indian people. We've done a better job with Spanish speakers and being able to discriminate what's typical and what's a language difference and what's a language disorder. But we haven't done as great a job with American Indian communities. And it requires research. It requires people being able to understand the native language and the culture and then beginning to develop language batteries that then can help make those distinctions. So, that is important.
So interesting. Such an interesting conversation we're having today about speech and language disorders. If you want to get in on it, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to the phones. We've got Gordon in Red Lake, Minnesota, tuned in on KOJB. Hey there, Gordon.
Hello, Anine. Thank you so much for having me on. I just wanted to talk about my cousin who was born with Down syndrome, and when he was little, we'd let him say that at the drum, or all of his family would let him sing at the drum. He even had his own drum, and he learned how to speak Ojibwe and sing. And he's just 50 years old today, over 50 years old today, and he still does the singing. And he talks a lot of English, but he still likes to talk Ojibwe. And it wasn't something we as a family tried to do. It's just something that happened because we just let him participate with all the things we were doing. And it just turns out he's a very functioning member of the tribe and of the village, and he still sings at the drum. And he beat COVID, by the way. So I just wanted to pass that on. I believe that cultural thing is very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Gordon, thank you for sharing that. We appreciate it. And Sachin, Dana, you know, anything you want to share about what Gordon shared? I know that this it is something that you also experience in your family.
Oh, most definitely. So yeah, for my son who has Down syndrome as well, and he's nonverbal, he does respond a lot to music and drumming and rattling, using percussion, beats and everything. And it's just something that, you know, he picked up on as well, and it helps soothe him. And he has something that has like a fidget sponge that helps calm him down. And when there's music in the background, I notice that the rhythm, he goes with the rhythm of the beat of the song, and that helps him too. And, but yeah, definitely. I have my son, his IEP, one of his goals is to be a contributing member of society. Just what Gordon was saying for his friend with Down syndrome. And, So, yeah, I definitely understand that, you know, that my son's participation in the community can be used, you know, at an IEP that can help him with his developmental delays.
Do you speak Navajo around him?
Oh, yes, I just the, you know, the everyday language, but no long sentences yet, but just like little short commands, like stay, sit, eat, you know, it's quiet time, you know, just stuff, just like really short, small sentences. But yes, definitely, I do talk to him in Navajo.
And Sasheen, Dana, do you talk to us about the concerns or issues that you see parents experiencing when they're trying to navigate these resources and therapies to help their kids with language disorders? What are some of the challenges they face?
For some parents is the denial, you know, the denial that their children are not speaking at a certain age, and the parent, it's hard for the parents to take on that grasp to know that their child, you know, is speech delayed, and you know, for the parents to know that there is resources out there, but the parent, you know, themselves hasn't grasped onto that concept of, you know, their children being speech delayed. But I just always let my families know that, you know, EPICS is here for them for resources, and just to, you know, if they don't understand the part of requesting for evaluations, I can help with that process as well and look for resources throughout the state. Hands and Voices is another good collaboration that we work with that can help with speech delayed families, and also bringing up the technology, assistive technology into the home as well. It also helps tremendously.
Thank you for that. Crystal, you know, Christine brought up something interesting about parents not wanting to admit or get on board with, like, you know, like their kids needing some help. I can imagine, I'm not a parent, but I can imagine there might be like a tendency to also maybe blame yourself or maybe turn it around on the other people, like we were talking about earlier, you know, especially if it's a non-native speech pathologist who's telling you there's something wrong with your kid, right? How do you navigate through those really challenging conversations?
I've worked with a few parents who are apprehensive about having their child identified as having a speech language impairment or even being identified as a child needing special education services in the schools or early intervention services. And I think the key is in providing some education for those parents, helping them to understand there is no blame to place here. It's no one's fault. We just want to get at, you know, what is a possible cause, but also look at what is the disorder, what is a communication disorder. But I always say to parents, there's always good news in that there are some interventions that can help their child become better at communicating, whether it's, say, for a child with a hearing disability, learning how to use sign language, a child with autism who has trouble communicating, providing a picture communication system for them, augmentative alternative communications, even using an iPad or other electronic device to assist them in communicating. So once the parents can see past the fact that my child is different or my child is having some difficulty here, just turning it around and helping them to understand there are ways to help. There is, you know, ways that we can help the parents help the child to communicate or to overcome whatever communication disorder they might have. And I find that usually when providing parents with some good information and helping them to understand there is no blame to lay, most parents will generally come around. And then when they see that their child is making some gains in therapy, I find that most parents are very welcoming after that. They're very much into wanting to learn how they can help. And we really do rely on parents because parents play an important role as a child's first teacher. So even in early intervention, when a therapist comes into a child's home, we're looking more at how can I be a model for this parent so that the parent can carry on the skills that I'm teaching so that they can employ these skills every day in that child's life. Because therapy only happens intermittently once a week or twice a week for 30 minutes. And so we really do rely on parents and also in the schools and preschools or early intervention programs at Head Start, relying on other caregivers in those settings to use the practices that we're modeling for them to help those children overcome their disorder in whichever environment they're going to navigate. Because they're only in therapy, like I said, a minimal amount of time. They're only in school a minimal amount of time. They're out in the greater world, in their community, more time. So if the parents are there right alongside them, helping them and facilitating their communication, then that's best practice for us.
Interesting. Dr. Vining, I want to give you a moment to talk. We're just wrapping up here, but what advice do you have for parents who might be facing this early on? You know, they've just recently got a diagnosis and they're feeling overwhelmed about it.
Well, I think that an important part of this is the cultural understanding of the view of the speech and language, and when there's a deficit, you know, it's the Western perspective of what is a deficit and how that these deficits can be measured, and that the causes are based on Western views of what could cause these difficulties. And so sometimes when I work with families, they have their own understanding of what caused it. They have their own understanding of how to address these challenges. And in our Native culture, I think there's much more acceptance of these challenges, that it's just part of the child's personality, or it's just part of their being. And there's a much more, I think, acceptance of who they are as their children, and that they say, you know, he's going to catch up at his own pace. You know, he's going to do it on his own terms. And so it's more of a support role. You know, I come across grandparents who are raising their grandchildren, and they have a very traditional understanding of development and from their Native perspective. And so I think it's trying to help communities and families understand that there are different ways of looking at this, you know, child having difficulty. The Western culture says this is a problem because, you know, and you have to explain it from that perspective. And then from the Native perspective, how they view this child having difficulty and what needs to be done in their own traditional ways. You know, some may require prayer, some may require certain songs, some may require certain offerings. And so, again, this is to put things into balance. And I think this is an important part of our Native communities, is that when we're looking at these challenges, whether it's speech and language disorders, emotional challenges, behavioral challenges, that we are working with the culture and understanding from their perspective what it means, and not just the Western views of, you know, this is what, you know, this problem and this is how to address it. I think you have to include both perspectives.
Absolutely.
For families.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Christine Vining, Sachin Begay, and Crystal Bearhills for sharing that with us today. We really appreciate it. Join us tomorrow for a discussion about Native philanthropy and helping others during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good one. Oh.
Native America Calling is supported by Oregon State University eCampus. The strength that comes from your tribal community can make all the difference in reaching your goals. Oregon State eCampus is committed to providing another source of strength with a supportive educational community that respects your culture. Earn your degree online, but not on your own. Visit ecampus.oregonstate.edu/Native America Calling.
Gegu na giwi ishichige ganawain and dizilyan ani oshki bibung, mi ishigwa dawaj ge du daman ge dani mino ayayan. Ganoj eno ki de nishinabe akuzi wigamigung nawaj jige kain daman, ma wadishiwain healthcare.gov, ge ma ganoj 1-800-318-2596. Gaundinagadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.